City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And you are listening to the Windy City Queercast. This is show 168. I am Peter Maverick.
Hey, Peter. I'm Amy Matheny.
Hi.
How are you, baby?
I'm good.
I know we're not talking about this in this show. We're going to talk about in the next show, New Year's resolutions. So you're going to have to think how you feel about them. If you can ask some people, what resolutions do you think are common and what's going to be common for the new year? I think as we look ahead, because we're going to be talking about New Year's next week in our holidays, our next show. And we're also going to be following that up with Miss Cleo giving us her 2008 predictions, which she's very accurate. Mm-hmm. She was very accurate in 2007. So we get her here almost first.
And she'll be recorded and then we'll know as 2008 lays itself out. We'll
exactly.
say, oh, yeah, man. Cleo said it was
yeah,
true.
Yeah, man. My babies. So, this is what's happening. We well, love no, you, Cleo.
My brethren. I think my that's brethren. What you call us. That was so delightful. I just love talking to her.
I did love talking to her.
You know, today on the show, it's interesting. We have, and I'm going to start with that at the top. Usually we have that at the end of our banter, but I'm going to start with that at the top because we have an interesting woman, Ellen Kahn, who works for the Human Rights Campaign, All Children, All Families with them. And, you know, HRC has just been, it's so amazing to me working in the corporate environment. It'll be almost 9 years. Well, it'll be 9 years that I've worked in corporate America in March. And in those 9 years that I've worked for UBS, consistently HRC's name has cropped up in corporate America in a big, big way. They have become the almost premier brand name, I think, in the queer community for quality almost.
Well, and their corporate index, I think, is really a great barometer and a great guide for GLBT people who want to know how to spend our dollars and what companies we want to work with and be serviced by and, you know, in any way that we want to be in communion or in cooperation with businesses and corporations. HRC is really the great litmus test to who's walking the walk and talking the talk.
And it's not rah, 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 go HRC. That's not why I bring it up. But I bring it up because we're at a point, I think, in our history where we can say, you know what? We are queer individuals who have the right to choose and look at these wonderful resources we have to help us choose.
Yeah.
It doesn't just have to fall on your shoulders. It doesn't just have to be, oh, did you hear about that store down the street that doesn't like gay people?
Yeah.
Don't shop there. It doesn't have to be word of mouth. It's so much bigger than that these days. It's moved into, I mean, we had someone from GayWheels.com on talking about things like that. Culture of for gay people, about gay people, helping you make informed gay decisions. It's just amazing to me that it is flowering and blooming all over the place.
Well, and it's a celebration too of our allies as we celebrate and support them, people who are aligning themselves with us and aligning themselves with equality and fair treatment for all people, whether it's on their job, you know, how they hire, and how they don't fire, you know, what kind of policies they have within their organization, in terms of giving, philanthropically, you know, really it's really an amazing thing. And as you said, it tells us that we have this information now. And so some of us, you know, if you're listening to the podcast and you're more closeted or you don't live an open lifestyle, these are the radical political choices that you can make on a daily basis. Where do you shop? Where do you work? Where do you don't have to be out to be politically making those choices.
Right, exactly.
Right. You're making those political choices just by where you go get your pharmaceuticals.
Where you put your money.
Where you bought, what kind of car you drive.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it doesn't have to be that you have a big rainbow sticker on that car. It's merely in the brand and the alliance with a business or a corporation, big or small. And, you know, it does show us our choices and that we, you know, this is our power. Our power is in how we choose. And I think our interview today with Ellen is so fascinating about this, all children, all families, or all families, all children, because I think for a lot of us, as GLBT people, we don't think we actually are not maybe sure that we even have a choice when it comes to families. Some GLBT people have children and have families because maybe they married someone of the opposite sex and then came out. Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of GLBT families, I think, started. But as we've moved over the past couple of decades into adopting, into looking at artificial insemination and surrogate mothers, and we've looked at different ways to build families, I still think that there is a big wave of people who think, I don't really have that choice. This is not a decision I have to make. I'm not going to accidentally get somebody pregnant or get pregnant. Right. And we can often go through decades without consciously making the choice or even thinking about, do I want to have a family? Do I want to have a child? Do I want to be a parent?
Because it's almost assumed that the option is closed down, that it's this big nebulous Mount Everest that you have to climb.
And
if
can
you wanna,
we? Can't we? How does my city feel about it? How does
my
state?
What is my family going to do? How am I going to cope with this?
What organizations
do
or agencies
who can help
think?
Me? Yeah.
Exactly. And really, that's what our interview is about today. Taking a moment to look at what the foster care and adoption realities are in the U.S. today. And how can we show up as GLBT people? We are a commodity. We are people that are, as you just said, like we are a commodity to be catered to and looked at as viable options for homes, beautiful, loving, full homes, either for foster care or a full adoption, permanent adoption. And Ellen helps us navigate what the realities are, what are the roadblocks, and also a new guide that they've developed to help organizations and agencies and ultimately help you explore this question for yourself. So it's a show about family at a holiday time, and families are what we make of them. They may not be your family of origin for everybody. You build your family, you know, based on love and trust, and you find your family.
Yeah. You find your family. You know, you're born onto one family, and this goes back to last year or year before when I was at the 30 under 30 that I always felt I was so blessed that I have two families. I have the family I grew up with, and I have this other family that I've built over time, and I know someday I want kids. I know someday I want to do this. I don't know how I'm going to do it. And it's, you know, it's still a mystery yet to be solved. But people like Ellen and people like HRC working to make it, to make it known, to make it visible, to make it, I don't know, loud. You don't necessarily have to be loud and proud. You just have to be loud about it.
Well, and accessible to the information that we need.
And really breaking that ground for what's to come. It just goes to show that really we have ultimate control over everything we do as much as many people are like, no, I have to do this. I have to go here. I have to be this kind of person.
Or marginalized.
It's just so not true anymore. And those who still feel marginalized and disenfranchised, they really, I always feel they, you know, it's like a party. You can show up at a party with a flashy dish, or you can show up at a party with, you know, just yourself and your good temperament. But it's what you do at that party that makes you you. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you bring. Doesn't matter what you're wearing when you come. But you have to show up and you have to just be there. And you have to be the best you that you can be. And there's nobody really telling us to do that these days.
Right.
There's people pulling us in so many directions and so many financial directions and so many political directions and things like that. So there's never a, what am I? Who am I in this moment? And this program actually exemplifies the fact that, well, we're just trying to let people be who they are. There's a great moment in the interview when she says, you know, it's not about being gay. It's just about being a parent.
Yeah.
And it's not about being gay. It's about being a person.
Right.
You know, and so just showing
and
up as a person.
And it's about the kids.
Yeah. It totally is, especially in this case. So it's good. I think you also called them like HRC, the consumer reports.
They're like the consumer reports for the queer community.
And it's a perfect analogy because we need more of those things. You know, it's great to have this one source, and there are a few others out there, but we definitely need more because the more we have, the better informed we can stay. And you know, information is the crux of it all. We just need to be aware of what's going on.
Yeah, and you can always go to HRC.org and get their corporate index and with everything, travel, buying, good to look at. So stay tuned. This is a powerful, important interview, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Find out what happened before Dorothy dropped in at Wicked, Chicago's newest smash hit musical, and the untold story of the Witches of Oz.
Popular. I know about popular.
Popular, USA Today calls Wicked a triumph. And Time magazine writes, if every musical had the brain, the heart, and the courage of Wicked, Broadway really would be a magical place. Now, this Grammy Award-winning blockbuster has cast its spell over Chicago. Wicked at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts Oriental Theater.
And nobody in all of Oz, no wizard that there is or was, is ever gonna bring me.
Call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com today. Because the longer you wait, the longer you'll wait to see Wicked.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of December 24th, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Remy Bumpo Theater Company presents Philip Barry's sparkling comedy of manners, The Philadelphia Story. Don't miss the staging of the beloved Katharine Hepburn film classic. The Philadelphia Story is playing now through January 6th at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. For tickets and information, call 773-871-3000 or visit remybumpo.org.
Altar Boys is a hilarious, wholly inspiring musical comedy about five small town boys, Matthew, Mark, Luke, Juan, and Abraham, trying to save the world one screaming fan at a time. The Tribune says this production is brilliant. You'll laugh your socks off. Altar Boys is playing now at the Drury Lane Water Tower Theater. Visit alterboyschicago.com.
Don't miss the musical event of the season, Ella, playing at the Northlight Theater through January 6th. Set your feet tapping with Ella, the swinging new musical about jazz legend Ella Fitzgerald, featuring memories from her extraordinary life and more than 20 of her greatest hits. For info or tickets to Ella, visit Northlight.org.
The all-male comedic ballet company Le Ballet Trocadero de Monte Carlo, or The Trocs, as they are affectionately called by ballet enthusiasts, appear one night only at the Harris Theater in Millennium Park, January 17th. This hilarious troupe performs a fabulous evening of high art and satire. Tickets for Trocs are the perfect gift for all of the divas, prima ballerinas, and darlings on your holiday list. Call 312-334-7777 or visit harristheaterchicago.org today.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
While lesser men strapped on skates and played hockey, you donned skin-tight leotards and a teeny cowboy hat and learned figure eights.
Going round.
Practiced and practiced, hoping, knowing, someday, you'd be good enough to wear a giant puppet costume and skate in an ice show.
Welcome to the Big Ten.
Skate perfectly and you're a crowd pleaser. Mess up and fall on your butt, and you're still a crowd pleaser.
Oh!
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, oh Titan of the Tights. You may never wear a medal, but sequins are shiny too.
Mr. Professional Figure Skate.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News. By a vote of 45-33, Assumption College faculty members charged its president, Francesco Cesario, with violating school policy when he canceled a gay student's group's plans to bring gay veteran Eric Alva as their speaker for a Veterans Day event. However, the faculty voted not to pursue the issue. A 22-year-old transgender student, Court Osborne, is fighting Southern Utah University for not letting him live in a male dorm. Equality Utah is calling the university's actions discriminatory. SUU says it has housed a trans student in the past and denied Osborne housing because he did not meet the school's requirements that he complete hormone therapy and undergo sexual reassignment surgery. Osborne says he was told he could not apply to live in a female dorm either. The American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia recently demanded that a Virginia high school that threatened a 17-year-old student with suspension for wearing a lesbian pride t-shirt prohibit themselves from censoring her in the future, according to the organization. A student wore a t-shirt that had two overlapping female gender symbols. The ACLU of Virginia is calling the school's actions unconstitutional censorship. The city of Moscow, Idaho, recently passed a domestic partner benefits resolution 4-2 that provides insurance benefits to city's workers' same-sex partners. The city's insurance company recently offered a new plan that covered both same and opposite-sex partners. The resolution does not create domestic partnerships. Senator Gordon Smith, a Republican of Oregon, introduced a bill to extend domestic partner benefits to federal employees. He co-introduced the Domestic Partner Benefits and Obligations Act of 2007 with Senators Joe Lieberman and Tammy Baldwin and 17 others. HRC applauded the introduction of the bill, saying that it would help the federal government compete with companies for the nation's top talent. American Gladiator star Alex Militia Castro is a gay porn star. Castro is former Colt Studios model who went by the name of Elian Cortez. Castro posed for nude photos for Colt. He has also appeared in several films as well, although not for Colt. And finally, lesbian rumors are swirling around about Lindsay Lohan and her new gal pal, Courtney Semel. The two were recently spotted holding hands at the holiday party of an LA power lesbian. Semel is the daughter of Yahoo CEO Terry Semel. And that's your Windy City Queercast news.
Hi, this is Betty Buckley, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast with your hosts, Amy and Peter.
It's a big gay contest, and you could win. All you have to do is enter. Top prize, American Airline tickets for two, good for travel in the U.S. 48, Bermuda, Bahamas, Mexico, Canada, or the Caribbean. Second prize, VIP theater package to Altar Boys with t-shirts and a meet and greet for you and three friends. And third place, a CD extravaganza of great recording artists. To enter, just email promotions@windycitymediagroup.com and list your top three gay entertainers of all time and include your name and phone number. In the subject of the email, put the word contest. That's it. Join our year-end big gay contest. You might be a winner.
Drawing to be held January 1st, 2008 by random drawing. Winners will be notified.
The Human Rights Campaign is America's largest civil rights organization. They work to achieve equality for GLBT citizens and help realize a nation that has that kind of fairness and equality for all. You've seen the equal sign. You know about HRC. Well, the Human Rights Campaign has launched a new initiative to help find permanent families for children in foster care by looking to GLBT couples and individuals. And at a time when this administration wants no child left behind, so many are overlooked. Looking loving homes for children based solely on discrimination. We're so thrilled to have Ellen Kahn here, the director of the Family Project, to discuss this new adoption initiative. Hey, Ellen, how are you?
Hi.
Great. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Oh, it's fantastic to talk with you. And it's very, very exciting work that you get to be a part of. Let's talk a little bit about the reality for gays and lesbians in this country to adopt or provide homes for children in foster care.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is that it's a very uneven landscape, depending on where you live and what the laws are, where you live in terms of the whether there are explicit laws around adoption by gay and lesbian folks or whether the laws are kind of clear, unclear, more progressive. And then there's a lot of unevenness because adoption agencies, both public and private adoption agencies, that are responsible for preparing adoptive parents as well as for making placements that are the best placements for children, are not always on board with the belief that GLBT folks can and should be considered as great potential resources for these kids. There are some agencies that are outstanding that have been real pioneers and for many years have successfully placed with folks in the GLBT community. But there are lots of agencies that are still kind of resistant, maybe conflicted, or maybe are open, but when you really get in there and you start looking at how they work with our community, you find that they might be treating us perhaps as, you know, sort of a second-class applicant, or they might be only willing to place certain kinds of children with us. And so there's just a lot of variation. And what we're trying to do is to, you know, get the leaders in the adoption agencies to really do a thorough assessment of every area of practice and give them some real good guidance around how to create the sort of fair and sort of level playing field. So any person, whether single or partnered, gay or straight, who has the desire and interest to open their homes and hearts to a child who needs a permanent family has the opportunity to do that. And in the end, all the kids win.
So what are some of the best case scenarios states that are doing it right? Because we kind of got two different things to talk about based on what you just said. Just give us an example, just because we have listeners all over the U.S. Mm-hmm. and all over the globe. You know, what states are like doing it right? What states are the biggest challenges? And then maybe we'll talk about some of the organizations and agencies.
Yeah, well, it's hard to talk about one without the other. Folks may know this, but Florida is the only state that actually has a ban so that gay and lesbian folks who are known, you know, part of this is whether you're out and whether agencies are, you know, actually assessing whether you might be a gay or lesbian person if you present as a single person. But Florida is a state that simply bans gay and lesbian people from adopting children. They don't ban us from being foster parents, but they ban us from permanently adopting a child in Florida. So in other states like Mississippi and Utah, there are laws that say, you know, unmarried couples can adopt. There are different ways that law gets interpreted, and that's kind of where, you know, the agencies in these states where the laws are more restrictive, some agencies have adapted and sort of, you know, work with folks they know to be GLBT, and they do it in a way that is consistent with the law. But they also kind of know that there are sort of some, you know, you have to navigate around some of these things.
Right.
And in other, like, you know, California and New York, District of Columbia, those are a few states that sort of stand out as probably having some of the sort of the best. I mean, Massachusetts, of course, now.
Right.
With, you know, Massachusetts has a pretty good history in general, being, you know, relatively progressive state, but also just the history of the child welfare system and the adoption profession there also being more progressive. But it's really, I mean, it's interesting because I've connected with agencies that are in fairly, you know, conservative environments. I've connected with agencies that are in more rural areas. And it really their ability and willingness and capacity to work with the GLBT community depends so much on the beliefs and philosophy and commitment of their leadership than it does on the laws that govern, you know, where they practice.
Right.
So it's hard to talk about one without talking about the other. It's, you know, what I hear more and more from people is that, you know, where GLBT people sort of hit some challenges or pitfalls in the adoption process has so much to do with, you know, social workers or adoption folks who work at adoption agencies who are biased, who have, you know, negative attitudes or who buy into a lot of the myths about us and therefore don't really work with us in a way that's respectful and ethical and professional. And that's generally where the main problems arise.
So in looking at, obviously, that is, so you're saying from agency and organization to agency and organization, there is subjectivity that comes in that can help or hurt GLBT couples or individuals who want to get into the adoption process. But what are the facts? Like, what are the statistics in our country right now of how many kids need homes and can't find homes because they're missing all of these families that are being rejected?
I'm glad you asked that, and that's really precisely what the inspiration for this initiative has been. There are 500,000 children at any given time. That's
wow.
Usually the sort of static statistic who are in foster care. Now, of those, over 100,000, approximately 110,000, are in need of a permanent adoptive family. And what that means is they are their parental rights of their biological parents have been terminated. And, you know, that usually is the result of, you know, some hard work being done by social workers who try to do everything they can to keep a child with a biological parent or with some of their family of origin. When that's not possible, and there are lots of reasons why, you know, that sometimes is the reality, then they are then in need of being adopted into a permanent family. So think about, you know, at least 100,000 kids, as we're speaking right now, of all ages, from newborns up to teenagers, are in need of a permanent family. And this is, if you think about what kids, all kids need and deserve some sense of security and permanence and a place to call home. And as you mentioned, there are lots of folks in the GLBT community who have an interest in, have sort of are drawn to the idea of parenting. Not all of us may, have as our path to parenthood the idea of adopting a child or adopting a child from foster care, but many of us do. And I think, frankly, more of us would consider this if we simply knew, A, more about the kids and what their needs are and who they are, and B, we knew what agencies had an open door policy, would welcome us, would treat us with absolute respect and dignity, and help us create a family. So those are, that's really the compelling thing, is that there are just so many children and youth who need permanent families. And I talk to child welfare professionals all over the country, most of whom are heterosexual, who are, not necessarily, aligned with or have any formal connection to the GLBT community, but their primary interest is, best interests of kids and helping kids find families. And I hear so many of these folks say that that in their agencies they have been just so moved by the level of commitment and the quality of the parenting they see in the GLBT community, and that they just think we're such an untapped resource. And that's why we've been able to develop such great relationships with a lot of these folks who were really, if you will, carrying the flag. They've partnered with HRC Family Project to make all children, all families a success. And frankly, we couldn't do it without them, because, generally, this is what's interesting about this work is, when you talk about adoption or foster parenting, you can't really talk about it from the gay rights perspective, because it's all, when you're talking about finding a family for a child, it's about what's best for children. So it's adult rights, whether you're a straight or gay adult. Like, adult rights just go right out the window.
Right.
So it's been and it should be that way. I mean, that's the practice of child welfare. So what's been so wonderful and really heartening to me is that so many child welfare professionals, younger, older, straight, gay, from all different ethnic, racial, cultural backgrounds, really get it. They see that, this is really about making sure there are fair policies, that there's culturally competent, practitioners, so that any GLBT person who wants to walk through a door has every opportunity. We go through the same process, we have the same assessments, the same training, the same preparation. It's not about different rights or special rights. It's totally about just having the same opportunity and being able to, build a family through adoption if that's what we want and hope for.
So Ellen, is the initiative and the move that you guys are making to educate, to inspire, to provide leadership, how will you affect that change? Because number one, it sounds like a huge, huge challenge to face in the face of so many different hybridized environments where GLBT parents or parents-to-be are trying to navigate.
Yeah, great question. We just released something called the Promising Practices Guide, which is it's just 125 pages that's full of really concrete, practical guidelines, primarily for agency directors or higher level administrators in adoption agencies, that just walks them through every area of practice, from the management part, the leadership and management, which is really key, because it is the leaders and it is dependent upon the leaders and managers to say we want to be this kind of welcoming environment. And then it's really looking at the skills and competencies that the staff have to have when they're recruiting families, when they're preparing and assessing families, when they're supporting families who are waiting for a placement, when they're making placement decisions, when they're supporting the families after the child is placed well into the future, because adoption doesn't end the day that the adoption is finalized. It really, in some ways, really just starts then, and then you've got a whole life with your children or child, and there are ways that agencies can provide really good support. So the guide has an assessment built into it, so an agency can take the time, go through the guide step by step, complete the assessment, get a really honest and objective look at how they're doing, what they're doing well, where they're not doing so well, and then they're going to get some technical assistance from a partner of ours at Hunter College School of Social Work. You know, so I looked at your assessment. Here's what we think you need to do. They're going to get a customized, you know, response about how to make improvements. And then when they hit certain benchmarks, which are outlined in the guide, they can earn a seal of recognition from all children, all families, which they can, you know, put on their website or put in the marketing materials. And it will send a very powerful message, as, you know, to GLBT folks who are looking for an agency. Because I think, you know, that's, again, another thing that people talk about over and over is the first and hardest decision that a lot of folks in our community have to make is, what agency do I go to? And most of us are really worried that we're not going to have a good experience, or that we're going to be scrutinized in a different way than maybe straight folks would. So the word of mouth, or looking for the seal of recognition, or looking for some check mark that agencies have from an organization like HRC that's really, you know, sort of, you know, assessing them and taking a look at them, I think is going to be a really big, it's going to make a big difference in the way agencies practice. And, you know, every agency out there has the mandate to find permanent families for children. And there's no agency director that would say, oh, yes, we have enough great families and we don't need any more. So they're all wanting to bring more people in and to have the best possible families to choose from. So if, you know, you're in California and there are, you know, 10 agencies that practice within, you know, a 20-mile radius, and one of them gets the seal recognition and another one gets it, you know, there's going to be a little bit more impetus, if you will,
yeah.
for those. You know, it's like any, you know, I hate to say business or any kind of profession, you know, you need to keep your market share. And for these folks, their market share is bringing the best possible families for kids.
Mm.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to ask, how was this received? You just returned from the Child Welfare League's annual adoption and foster care conference that was in New Orleans, where you presented this guide and presented this to these agencies. And did they, what was the reception? I mean, were they enthused that this work had been done and that possibly they could work toward accessing these potential parents?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, the response was very positive, and what people really liked about this initiative and about the guide in particular, since they were really seeing the guide for the first time, is that, you know, for agencies that sort of want to be, like, they want to do the right thing, and maybe they are even working with gay and lesbian folks, and they've been doing that for a while, when they start to really look at the guide and how thorough it is and all the different pieces that really make for a fully welcoming, competent practice, they, you know, they'll say, and literally they said this to me, you know, I thought we were doing really well, but now I see that we have a lot of, you know, road to travel ahead. Or, you know, little things like, you know, looking at the language they might have on their website or in a mission statement, it's saying, you know, I'd never even thought about how this language might sort of alienate a GLBT person. Mm. So we're raising a lot of awareness about how, you know, you really need to walk the talk when you talk about being competent or welcoming with the GLBT community. So people are excited. It's a tool that they can really use, and they can measure how they're progressing. It's, you know, a very concrete, practical thing. And they also are, I think the response has also been really terrific around, you know, it seems like for the most part in the world of child welfare professionals, the debate about whether or if GLBT people should be parents is kind of over. There are some people who are, you know, still a little bit conservative, resistant, but the majority of folks who are really, you know, moving the profession and who are really the decision makers and opinion leaders, they totally get it. They know, they've seen success stories all around them of gay and lesbian folks raising kids, doing a great job. Every, you know, the kids are fine. They know the research. They know that there's no real basis to deny or to discriminate or to have barriers. So it's just really great to see that folks have moved forward and that the wave within child welfare is really much more progressive on these issues.
So is the hope that when this, the guide, when Promising Practices gets into these agencies and organizations, you all give them the HRC stamp of approval, you know, language starts changing. How does this information then become accessible to GLBT individuals or couples who want to get into the, you know, to get information? Will there be some sort of
Come to you
resource?
To say,
yes, on the HRC.
Who are the good
what
ones?
What you've collected?
Yeah, there'll be, well, there are two. There's a short term answer and a long term answer. The short term answer is that we'll have a database, and that as agencies submit their benchmarks, they will be added to our database. And so people can see, oh, here's an agency in Kansas that, you know, has non-discrimination, that is, you know, signed up with All Children, All Families, that has, you know, hit their benchmarks, and that's where I'm going to go. And that'll be just an easy navigation tool for folks in our community and everywhere, literally in the U.S., that they can find these agencies. The longer-term piece, though, is as we get more agencies on board, doing this work, doing well, hitting their benchmarks, becoming more confident, we're going to be investing our resources over the next year in developing what we think are, you know, really good, innovative outreach and education campaigns aimed at the GLBT community, so that for those of us who are thinking about becoming parents and we want to really, you know, consider all the options, including adopting children for foster care, or just learning more about adoption in general, we're going to develop materials. We're going to develop a lot more information through our website. We're going to do, you know, public forums and town hall meetings around the country where we'll partner with these agencies that are excelling, and we'll have community forums, you know, where they are, and we can invite the GLBT community to come in to hear about the agencies, to learn about the kids, to learn about adoption and what the steps are you take, and to hear from other parents to really get. I mean, that's when you're trying to bring folks in as resources for these kids, and you know, you do have to, you have to go out there, and sometimes you have to find people. Now, I think a lot of GLBT people will be very motivated to come, especially once they see agencies are want them and are welcoming them. But we also will work with folks to go out and really educate and engage folks. And then, again, one of the things I heard echoed so many times by folks in the GLBT community, I hear over and over, well, I didn't know whether we could adopt, or I didn't know whether we could be foster parents, or I wasn't sure that they would let me do this, or whether I could, and like not understanding the laws and being afraid of being discriminated against, and just, it's a very, you know, it's kind of a scary thing when you're not sure. So this is, so part of what we'll do is we'll really help to answer a lot of those questions for folks and really help to bring people closer to doing this and bring them further along in the process. And that's kind of like a contribution that we'll make both to the broader kind of mission of child welfare professionals, which is to find permanent families. Like that's something we can bring, which is to use our position in the GLBT community to reach that community. And it's a way of sort of saying, hey, you know, you've done your work to make your agencies more welcoming. You've really put serious resources into it. And so we're gonna help you bring more folks in. So it's kind of a win-win situation.
It's a fantastic initiative and such a great organization to be spearheading it. The Human Rights Campaign's All Children, All Families Initiative. You can find more information. Keep up to date with this database as it builds. And if you need to receive their Promising Practices guide, all that information is located at the website hrc.org/ACAF for All Children, All Families. That's hrc.org/ACAF. We will have that linked on our website as well. Ellen Kahn, thank you so much for being with us. And this is very exciting information. And it seems like you're just becoming a lighthouse for GLBT people to connect them with these kids who are in need and need homes and families. And it's beautiful, beautiful work that you're doing.
Thanks, Amy and Peter. I appreciate the time to chat.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
the best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show, and Limelight.